From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. We are back in the studio getting ready for Arizona's upcoming matchup against Washington State. I'm Justin Spears, as always, joined here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley. How's it going, guys?
Good. You were so appalled by my low-tech podcast with Greg Hansen yesterday that we decided we were going to come do one, you know, like professional. So that's good.
I don't know how we're going to be able to top talking about Pullman, Washington, of all places, for the next 15 minutes, but we'll try.
I'm going to avoid talking about Pullman, Washington, because every time I do, I just get myself in trouble. So we should probably just concentrate on the game itself.
Can I tell you in 30 seconds my favorite Pullman, Washington story?
Sure.
Okay. I talked about this on episode 150 with Greg Hansen. That was yesterday. I think my first time there was 2008. I'm walking around with Hansen in downtown Spokane on a Friday night. Freezing my butt off because I've never witnessed cold quite like that. And I, while there, I walked into an Eddie Bauer, bought a pair of gloves, right? Went back 2 years later, realized that I had forgotten my one pair of gloves at home. Walking around that Friday night, walked into the exact same Eddie Bauer, bought the exact same pair of gloves. And so even now, in like a drawer in my house, I have a matching set of fuzzy Eddie Bauer gloves, all in like a gray, that I bought in back-to-back trips to Pullman. Of course, neither of them worked on my phone. Neither of them worked on my keyboard. So I still froze my butt and my hands off the entire time I was there.
You still wear those gloves to this day? Or they just
sit in a drawer? No, they sit in a drawer until I go someplace cold.
I was going to say, you're in Tucson, Arizona.
No.
There are occasions where one might want to have gloves, right? Do you ever take your kids out to... you know, like the Christmas, I'm going to call this the wrong thing.
Winter Haven?
That Christmas pumpkin patch thing up in Marana. Like, we did that last year. It was freezing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely freezing.
Now, I'm wearing pants for the second day in a row. I'm kind of pissed about that.
That might be 3 days in a row for me.
Yeah.
I'm still trucking along wearing shorts.
These are Tucson, hashtag Tucson problems. Yes.
Yeah.
So, guys, we have a football game this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be cold up there, as Ryan just alluded to.
But in Pullman, Washington.
Would you like some gloves? I can loan you some gloves.
I've got gloves. Okay. I'm good. I don't think it's going to be a big factor. It's going to be cold, but this doesn't seem like there's going to be precipitation, you know, not in the forecast as of now. Anyway, I'm trying to think of recent games with, like, this group of players that took place in cold weather. The Utah game was kind of cold. Obviously, that did not go well this year. Last year, they went up to Oregon late in the year, another game that didn't go well, although they were actually in it until the fourth quarter and got kind of blown out. I think the biggest, like, sort of non X's and O's factor in this game is what happens earlier in the day.
Yeah.
Right? That Utah game.
Yeah.
I mean, they will deny it to the hilt, and I'm going to write a whole story about all the scenarios and circumstances and everything. They've denied it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. It's not a factor.
Right.
We're just focused on us, et cetera. But, I mean, let's face it, right? If Utah loses that game, mm-hmm. everything changes for Arizona and ASU. Like,
yeah.
I mean, ASU is already kind of in the quote unquote driver's seat. But obviously has a very tough schedule with two road games, to end the year at Oregon. Oregon's a totally different team at home mm-hmm. and then at Arizona. But Utah loses. Hey, the door is open.
Yeah.
Right.
To win
the division, after all the troubles that they've had so far. And if they win and you're not, you know, that's no longer in play. You know, I think it's going to be a really great challenge for Kevin Sumlin and the leadership on that team to make sure that the team is fully engaged, because I could see them just being like, you know what? If we lose this game, no big deal. We can still beat our rival ASU. We can still be bowl eligible. Nothing really changes.
Right. In a way, you're looking past Washington State before that game even kicks off. If you're eliminated, I think. And that's not good if you're
No,
Arizona.
You don't need to do that.
No. I mean, I just think... I think back, was it 2 years ago, Michael, when it was like 70-7 or something up there?
69-7.
Thank you.
Nice.
69-7, 2 years ago up there. I mean, I remember Arizona being sort of, I mean, just decimated. It was probably the low point of the Rich Rodriguez era. And that offense can do that to you if you're not sort of fully on top of them all the time, right? And it's not just a matter of getting to the quarterback. It's a matter of showing them different looks and being aggressive in a way that keeps Washington State from doing what they do so well, which is, you know, quick short passes. And to me, I mean, if they're not fully engaged here, I don't think they're going to get killed by 62. They could lose by 40 if they're not fully engaged and ready to go on the defensive
right.
side of the ball.
And I'm the eternal optimist, and there was nothing positive to take out of that game
right.
2 years ago. I mean, it was just utterly miserable in every shape and form. I don't think Rich Rod was even that mad afterward because it was that bad.
Yeah. Well, he had had the entire second half to get over it. Yeah.
It was like a sense of resignation. Like, we are just, our program is just not where it needs to be as far as talent and so forth. And I remember they had a pretty conservative defensive game plan in that game, and I was pretty critical of it after the fact. There was a lot of that rush three and drop eight mm-hmm. type of thing. And I don't think that's going to happen this year. When I asked Kevin Sumlin on the Pac-12 conference call this week, like, you know, how do you sack a quarterback that never gets sacked? He was kind of laughed about it. But his basic message was you have to mix it up. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. sometimes you got to bring pressure. Sometimes you got to drop into coverage. I think they need to somehow confuse Gardner Minshew a little bit and cause him to hesitate, because it is really hard to get home.
Yeah.
The most pass attempts in the country and 7 sacks allowed.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. It's ridiculous. If you just add pass attempts and dropbacks, it's 544 dropbacks, and they've been sacked 7 times. That comes out to 1.3%.
That's
so
crazy.
If they pass, you know, they have to pass 90 times in the game for there to be like an average of 1 sack. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
What's that crazy stat that you tweeted out a couple days ago about the comparison with Khalil Tate? With their completion percentage or their QBR or something like that?
No, what it is, you know, everyone knows about like passer rating in the NFL, right? Well, the NCAA has their own version of that pass efficiency rating, okay? And it's an off-sited statistic. But I got to tell you, I don't understand the statistic at all. It makes no sense to me. And I'll call it up here in a second. But Khalil Tate has a higher, quote-unquote, efficiency rating than Gardner Minshew, which makes no sense given that Minshew has 29 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions, right? And a completion percentage of 69.6. Khalil Tate's 19-6 and a completion percentage of 56.2. So you tell me, how does Khalil Tate have a higher efficiency rating? Taking that even further, KJ Costello has the highest efficiency rating, quote unquote, in the league, and he has 10 interceptions, which is more than anyone else in the top 12. So
yeah.
I don't understand where that formula comes from. I think a lot of it has to do with like your average per attempt or average per completion. Like Stanford's kind of a big play passing attack, and so is Arizona, and I think that inflates it. But it doesn't really make any sense to call it an efficiency rating if the guy with the better TD to INT ratio and the better completion percentage has a worse efficiency rating.
Because to me, at least, completion percentage is efficiency, right?
I mean, of course.
I mean, that's kind of the definition of efficiency. What we forget, or what we know, Michael and Justin, and what the average fan forgets is in this offense, in this air raid attack, I mean, they don't really run as much as they use short passes to mimic the run, right? They think, and Sonny Dykes used to talk about that when he was here too, you know, they can get a 3-yard, just, you know, stick route completion. They think they can do it as safely and with as sort of little a chance for error as you could run it up the middle for 3 yards.
And I wonder if that's a product of Gardner Minshew transferring over from ECU, East Carolina, and they just pretty much try to simplify the offense for him at the start, and they say, well, it's working. We're not going to change it.
I'd flip it. I think it's the byproduct of having a 22- or 23-year-old quarterback, somebody who ran that very offense at East Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's a guy who's a veteran. I mean, and look, Michael, you know this. This offense can be beat. This is not, if this offense was America's best offense, more than 5 teams nationally would run it. But my goodness, you have to kind of come at it a whole different way, right? In a way, you need to kind of keep the game in front of you if you're on defense and hope that they get 2-3 yards per play and that you put them in third and medium, third and long situations.
You hope that you hold them to field goals.
Yep.
Maybe you get a turnover or two. I mean, the story of last year's game really was turnovers, right? They intercepted the late Tyler Helinski 4 times in that game, and one of them was a pick 6. I mean, when have you ever heard of a team passing for 600 yards in a game and losing by 21 points? That's what happened to Washington State last year.
And people forget Arizona won that game. I mean, at least in my mind, I go, well, Mike Leach has Arizona's number. And he does a little bit, but I mean, Arizona, it's not as if Arizona's always struggled against Wazoo. You know, I mean, Washington State, I think, is one of the teams in the league that Arizona has kind of a dominant winning percentage over all time. And so, you know, this offense, and we saw it when Nick Foles was here, we saw it when Arizona was running some version of it. It's designed to basically blow up passing records, right? I mean, again, right, 600 yards. It's designed to blow up passing records, but, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the same thing all offenses come down to, which is finding the end zone, which is putting yourself in third and manageables, which is converting on big plays. Mm. And, I mean, I don't know. I watched all of Washington State, Colorado last week. Washington State didn't look very good.
Yeah.
The final score was not indicative of how close that game was.
Mm. What was the final score? Like 30?
31-7.
31-7. But it was, what, 9-7 or 10-7 at halftime. Washington State had opportunities to pull ahead really early and didn't. They didn't look, I mean, look, winning on the road is hard in the Pac-12. I get it. But they didn't look dominant. I mean, they didn't look like far and away the league's best team last week. I still think they can be beat. I wonder if Washington State is looking past this game a little bit with the Apple Cup coming up. The only thing really that maybe guards against that is the fact they know they have to win every week to stay alive in the playoff hunt, whatever that play, those slim chances are.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that same issue that Arizona could face in terms of the focus and mentality
right.
of the team with the Apple Cup, not only coming up the next week, but it's a Friday game. So mm-hmm. it's like right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen in the past Washington State teams be in this very situation, and then they just kind of fade down the stretch for whatever reason. You know, they're 9-1. If you look at their stats, how they stack up in the Pac-12, it's really hard to find holes. Like, even defensively, they're really good. They're in the top 3 or 4 in just about every category. All that being said, they did lose against a pretty mediocre for USC team, right? Mm-hmm. They sort of needed a, you know, miraculous or dramatic finish to win against a Stanford team that's okay, not like an amazing Stanford team.
No.
And then, you know, they barely beat Cal, mm-hmm. right? Now Cal has kind of played everybody tough, and they mm-hmm. sort of turned the game into a street fight, and like they play all these games in the teens, and if they don't turn the ball over, they're going to kind of hang around. But it's not like they're blowing everybody out. Oh, no, I forgot Utah too. They needed an 83-yard touchdown in the last couple minutes to beat, mm-hmm. you know, which is a very good Utah team, but that was at home. So I don't think they're invincible. Mm-hmm. I mean, Arizona is obviously playing its best mm-hmm. football of the season. I don't know how the bye affects that. Sometimes when you're playing really well, like, I feel like you don't want to buy, you know, like, we've got it rolling, let's keep it going. But they also needed a break, like, mm-hmm. physically, mentally, et cetera. I think, you know, Khalil Tate and Laith Freck and people like that having another week to just kind of stay off their feet is only going to benefit them and the whole team.
Mm-hmm. And Washington State, well, their bye week was the first week of October.
Right.
And they're playing really good football right now, which is why I think Arizona could be in trouble this week. Just because the whole bye week with Arizona, them taking a week off, I just think that they're going to get out of rhythm a little bit. And I see them being competitive, but I don't see them really pulling out and pulling in.
Yeah, winning on the road is so hard. And winning in the cold on the road late at night against a good team is really, really hard. And this game has so many, it's such a minefield, Michael, in terms of the factors that could be working against Arizona, right? I mean, if Utah wins the early game, then Arizona doesn't have anything to play for. One. Two, they're on the road 2,000 miles from home. Three, it's cold. Four, it's late. Five, you know, I mean, they're coming off of a bye. You never know how a team's going to respond coming off of a bye. You know, it's there's so much that could go wrong for them. I think the path to victory, such as it is a very narrow one.
But
have they faced, like, legit crowd noise this year? Maybe Houston? I guess Utah.
Yeah.
Utah would probably be the one that stands Utah's out. Loud. And that was a complete fiasco. I mean, right. They were terrible. That night, you'd like to think that they've grown a lot, since that game. I don't think the crowd is going to be quite at the level that was for Washington State, Oregon when game day was there. I mean, Oregon couldn't run a play
right.
in the first quarter. I mean, it was that bad. But I do, you know, I think it's fair to have some skepticism about an, you know, offensive line that's played better, but it's still not like an amazing offensive line or a offensive line full of seniors just handling that whole situation, the communication, the cadence, all of those things.
But how would you assess Arizona's defensive line compared to the last couple of years they played Washington State? Would you say that it's been better? Obviously, it's better than last time Arizona went on the road to Washington State.
Right.
But is it better than last year? Because last year they had a whole healthy defensive line, but they didn't have a guy like PJ Johnson.
Say it's definitely, it's not deeper, but it's definitely the front line guys are better.
It's bigger. It's certainly bigger in terms of just size, in terms of sort of manly man football. I mean, I think that they have better big guys up front, maybe not as many of them as you want.
I mean, Jalen Harris and JB Brown, I mean, those look like legit dudes, don't they? I mean, like, you feel like these are really good pass rushers. PJ Johnson, we've talked about many times, has had a tremendous impact. Derek Bowles is playing the best ball of his career.
Can you explain to me, why wouldn't PJ Johnson come back? He's a redshirt junior, but he's treating it like it's his senior season.
Well, okay. I don't know why he's even being called a redshirt junior, because he redshirted his first year at Sac State.
Okay.
So he's in his fifth year of college right now. He was at Sac State for 3 years.
Okay.
And one of those was a medical. Okay. We had to sit out for medical reasons, and 1 year at San Francisco City College. And then, so this is his fifth year.
He's a senior. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I don't know why he's being called a redshirt junior. The reasons are he's got two kids.
Right.
Who he needs to feed. Mm-hmm. I think that would be one reason. He's playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he's has any sort of NFL stock, but when you're that big and that productive, I mean, they're going to look at you. And he tweets all the time about like how hard school is and
he's ready to
when
get
is
out.
It, when is this going to be over? That kind of thing. So that sort of leads me, in that direction, but that doesn't mean he's not going to come back. You know, he could probably be persuaded. You know, Ryan, you're talking about, how big or how much bigger the Arizona, defensive line is.
Mm-hmm.
Washington State on their two deep, they don't have a single defensive lineman more than 280 pounds.
Really?
How about that? They're 250, 280, 250. That's what they're lining up against. So you look at that on paper and you're like, oh, hey, right? Arizona should be able to run the ball, right? There's always a but. When you look at Washington State's rushing defense, they are third in the Pac-12, allowing only 125.4 yards per game and 3.8 yards per carry.
Can I speculate? Where are they in terms of yards per carry? Is it still third?
Yes, 3.8.
Because I think a lot of it too has to do with the kinds of games that they make you play.
Right.
And this is where that air raid offense I think is really the most successful is, you know, when all of a sudden if you're Arizona, how many points do you think Arizona is going to have to score if they're going to win?
In the 30s,
at least
for sure,
30,
right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, yeah, I would put that number probably at about 40. If you've got to score 40 to beat Washington State, and if they drive and score on their first drive and then hit a field goal on their second drive, you're trailing by 10. Guess what you're not going to do a lot of?
Run the ball. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, some of it, I think, is the fact that their defense is much better. I think Tracy Clays has done a really good job with them, with Joe Salovey as players, frankly, and with what's-his-name's players. Who's the guy at Michigan State or at Ohio State? Defense coordinator?
Oh, yeah, Alex Grinch.
Yeah. But a lot of it, too, is I think that the rhythm that they try to get their opponents into, right? I mean, they get you to play their game, and that's tough. It's telling. By the way, where's Hercules Mata'afa today? Is he in the NFL?
He's got to be, right?
I thought he was with the Saints.
The Saints?
Maybe he suffered like a, oh, I don't know. I also might be remembering this incorrectly. I might be thinking of, they had another pass rusher, Polynesian pass rusher, who went to the Saints a couple of years ago. I'll look it up.
The Vikings.
Minnesota Vikings. Okay, that's right.
He looks like a Viking.
He's great.
Hercules Mata'afa.
Hercules, I mean, he was a really good player. But I mean, that's...
He also suffered a season-ending injury.
Right.
Torn ACL.
Yeah.
But that speaks to my other point, Michael Lev, is this could be a top two Washington State team of all time, statistically, just in terms of wins and stuff. This team has one star. It's the quarterback.
Well, I think it speaks to the value of having a great coach mm-hmm. in college football, right? I mean, the coaches are the faces of the sport, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, obviously Alabama has a ton of great players, but Nick Saban is where it all kind of starts and ends. And Clemson, I mean, Dabo Swinney has turned out to be like in that, you know, kind of the current Mount Rushmore of coaches. You'd probably have put Urban Meyer in that class and probably still would. At this point, Jim Harbaugh has proved that he belongs up there. I mean, what coach has done more with less in like two of the most like remote outposts of, mm-hmm. of college athletics, Lubbock, Texas, and Pullman, Washington, than Mike Leach?
And he's done it. I think he's very self-aware. I think he understands kind of what his own brand is, whether he's at Washington State or Texas Tech. You know, what people don't understand, that, you know, and I've heard this five times this week, from people being like, man, imagine how much fun it would have been to cover Mike Leach here in Tucson. I don't think Mike Leach would have been fun to cover. I think Mike Leach says funny things and fun things, but Mike Leach is just as restrictive, if not more restrictive, to the public and media access than anybody else is. Mike Leach is a bear to work for. From everything I've ever heard, mm-hmm. He's very old school. You know, don't let the fact that he's incredibly smart and incredibly articulate fool you a little bit. I mean, he's a football coach. He has not reinvented the job.
No,
I mean, he's kind of just like everybody else, except he has a law degree and he's smart and he's funny. Mm-hmm.
When you talk about restrictive access, mm-hmm. is that why Pullman, Washington, is such a good fit for him? Because it's just isolated away from everybody else, and you're essentially on your own island. It's like, well, if we can get some guys here, mm-hmm. some lower tier players that I know I can turn into good football players, everything's going to be all right.
100%. I mean, when people say like, oh, how about Mike Leach to USC? You think Mike Leach would fit in the USC?
No.
LA.
You have to be like, talk about having to be the face of the program. Like mm-hmm. I would say like Pete Carroll was so good at it because play catch with people after practice, take pictures, kiss babies, great in press, great in, you know, always win the press conference, right?
And it's like being mayor. He liked being mayor.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And some people are more suited to be the mayor of LA, and some people are more suited to be the mayor of Pullman, Washington, where you can just kind of do whatever you want, and you can talk about who would win the, you know, battle royale among Pac-12 coaches or whatever for like 5 minutes of your press conference. Mm-hmm. And no one really cares. Right. So I do not think he'd be a great fit, at a place like USC. Like people have talked about Louisville, the job that came open. I mean, that might work, mm-hmm. you know, because I think at a place like Louisville, if you have a system like he has, maybe that can kind of give you a leg up where, you know, you're just not going to have the same level of talent as, like, say, Clemson or Miami or some other teams in the ACC.
I've got one, and it might work. You ready?
Sure.
Kansas Jayhawks.
That would work. That's a good one, too. Really good one.
The Big 12 is hot garbage. I think that he could win there one day, right? I mean, it wouldn't happen in year one. But I think that, you know, the only problem is in that league, you've also got Texas Tech, who runs the same stuff with Cliff Kingsbury, though who knows for how long. To me, I mean, if Kansas turns around and comes up with like $6 million a year to pay the man, I mean, if he can recruit to Lubbock and if he can recruit to Pullman, he can recruit to Lawrence. Lawrence is Paris.
Compared to
Pullman.
How are the facilities though out there in Kansas? I know they got good basketball facilities.
Not good. First of all, sidebar quick. Kansas's campus is gorgeous. Kansas reminds me so much of UCLA as a campus, and you wouldn't think that. You think flat. No, it's on a hill. There's trees and da 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 da. It's great. Their stadium is no good. I mean, it's on campus, but it's small. It's a lot like Martin Stadium at Washington State. I mean, I'd say probably on par with that, where, you know, you're not going to ever fit 50,000 people in there, but you don't need to because nobody goes to games. Mm. So, I mean, in that regard, that would be tough. But, you know, to me, Mike Leach, I think it ruins the Mike Leach narrative if he goes to a place that can recruit players. Right? I mean, I think it ruins the Mike Leach narrative if he goes to Maryland.
Well, and that's why when we were talking about this on radio the other day, mm-hmm. about him being the Tennessee guy, right? Does he really work out at a place like Tennessee?
No. I mean, I don't know.
In the SEC?
In that conference, nobody runs that offense. And so I think that you look at kind of novelty right? I mean, it's like running the option. It's better if you're the only one in your league doing it because you can catch people off guard.
Yeah.
People don't prepare for it. But who knows? Back to this weekend though. Who would have thought a month ago, Michael Lev, we'd be talking about Arizona Wildcats' path to the Pac-12 South Division title?
It's completely crazy. And it's still, a lot of things have to happen.
Mm-hmm. But not that many things. You know what? Like three things have to happen.
The dream is still alive for the all Wildcat Rose Bowl, between mm-hmm. Northwestern and Arizona, in which case, we might have to have some sort of a conversation about whether I'm, capable of being objective enough to cover said game.
You and Bruce Pascoe would need to take the week off.
It's still possible. They could still finish, 6-3 if mm-hmm. they win out?
Sure.
Which is probably about where, most people thought they could finish or what the mm-hmm. best case scenario mm-hmm. would be. It just hasn't gone the way anyone thought it would. Like, mm-hmm. it seemed really bad a couple weeks ago, right? Like, right. I mean,
Rhett Rodd was your quarterback.
I mean, that Utah game was just, I wouldn't say it was quite on the same level as the Washington State game from a couple years ago, but it wasn't far off.
Right.
And it was similar to the Houston game. I mean, they just got blown off the field. Mm-hmm. They looked like they didn't belong at all. And, we talked about this, Justin, like that UCLA game might have actually been kind of a turning point for them, even though they lost, because they played so well without so many of their main guys.
Because before that game, we were sitting here talking, well, will Arizona win another game
right.
this year?
Right. Greg Hansen, in his Sunday notes, goes, write it down, Arizona's not winning again this year. And you know what? Everybody, you'd be lying if you said you disagreed with him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think your average fan went, well, it's been nice knowing you. 4-8 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
What, 3-9?
3-9.
I think at the time that was the prevailing sentiment, was that this team was going to get worse and not better.
For this to happen, as we mentioned at the top, Utah has to lose, right? Right. You remember, I think it was 2015.
Yeah.
Utah came to Arizona late in the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2015. They were ranked 10th
overtime
in the country.
Yeah.
Arizona was totally reeling.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Pac-12 after dark, Arizona ended up winning in overtime, and it can happen.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, this game is in the morning, so it's like sort of Pac-12 before noon or something.
Right.
But it can happen. I mean, Colorado, there's a lot of speculation about Mike McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to play really hard for their coach. I mean, I don't think, like, talent-wise, do you think Utah is that much better than Colorado, especially with Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss being out of the picture?
Right.
I don't think so. I don't think it's that crazy of a scenario. I think it's less likely for Arizona to beat Washington State than mm-hmm. it is for Colorado yeah. to beat Utah.
Correct. Correct. And again, with Utah, I think that the one thing that guards against an upset there is Utah knowing dang well what it needs to do to win the division, right? This isn't Utah needing stuff to happen. Is Utah knows, okay, if we're going to win the division, we need at least to win today. And then you sit back and hope ASU stumbles.
Mm. Do you see ASU winning at Oregon and at Arizona to end the season?
I watched Oregon-Utah last week. I'm no fan of Oregon at this point. And I know they're different at home, but I'm not a fan.
ASU is going to lose one.
At least one of those,
at least
right?
one of those games, I feel like.
I mean, they could lose both,
yeah.
conceivably.
Mm-hmm. I will posit this, though. Is there anybody on Utah's team or Arizona's team anywhere near as good as Benjamin or N'Keal Harry?
Oof.
Is it possible that ASU has the best players of the three teams we're talking about?
Maybe. It's possible.
I would say N'Keal Harry's the best player among those teams for sure.
Right. He's going to be a first-round
pick. I haven't really seen Benjamin
right.
enough to say that he's like way better than JJ Taylor
right.
or what have you. But I know mm-hmm. that N'Keal Harry is, and I know how big of a problem it was for Arizona to cover him last year when they had Jace Whitaker
mm-hmm.
available.
Yeah. Right.
So, that's going to be an issue.
So we're not going to see Jace Whitaker at any point?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I haven't been able to confirm that, but mm-hmm. my understanding of the type of injury he has is mm-hmm. that like he can practice, he can do warm-ups, but he can't tackle.
That's a problem.
Which is obviously a problem when you're playing tackle football.
Possible
so it was an
comeback?
Elbow.
Next year?
I don't see.
Medical?
It's
up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the new rule would enable him to do that, or a medical or whatever you call it. He's played in one game.
Right.
And he never took a redshirt year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but hey, Jace Whitaker and Lorenzo Burns and those young guys who've looked pretty good this year coming back. That's a nice looking secondary.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, speaking of 2019, again,
real quick, you're blowing up. Everything okay?
I don't know. I think it's just people on Twitter.
Baseball recruiting class.
I tweeted out the baseball schedule, and everyone's all excited because baseball's awesome. Their schedule next year,
mm-hmm.
oh boy, it gets tough again. Washington and Stanford return. They have 5 road games mm-hmm. in
football,
the Pac-12.
Not baseball.
Football. Yeah, the football schedule for 2019 is tough, which is why everyone was kind of pointing to this year like, this is your chance, right?
Right.
The schedule totally sets up for success. You've got Khalil Tate, Kevin Sumlin, blah, blah, blah. You know, as the player said, like their goals are still out ahead of them,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they don't control their own destiny anymore.
Right. I think they need to play their 2 best games of the year to finish 6-6. I mean, I think that the effort that they've put, or I'm sorry, 7-5. They're 7-5.
Right. If they win both, they'd be 7-5.
I'm sorry. I think they need to play their 2 best games of the year to finish 7-5. I think that, I mean, Washington State on the road is going to be tough. And if ASU is playing for the Pac-12 South title, look out. You know, I mean, what if ASU is playing for a Pac-12 South title and Arizona is not?
Yeah,
you
right.
Know, talk about who wants it more, who's more desperate.
Right, but that's a lot of incentive for mm-hmm. Arizona, too. Like, we can prevent our arch rival from winning the division. I think in 2016, that terrible season, they knocked ASU out of a bowl.
They did.
Game by yeah. winning that last game.
They did.
So there's always that stuff going on. I mean, obviously for us, for fan interest, mm-hmm. reader interest, drama, et cetera, the best case scenario is the winner of that game, you know, wins the division.
Goes somewhere.
Right.
Real quick, guys, before we take off, Arizona, Washington, 8:30 p.m.
Washington
here.
State.
Washington State, 8:30 p.m. here in Tucson, 7:30 out there in Pullman. Michael Lev, you're cringing right now. Give us your prediction for Saturday night.
I haven't dived into this yet as far as a score mm-hmm. and so forth. I think that Arizona is going to be really competitive. I don't think it's going to be like it was a couple years ago. I think that they're going to need to run the ball effectively. Washington State, weirdly enough, leads the Pac-12 in time of possession. They had, and as unimpressive as they were against Colorado, they still had the ball for over 40 minutes. If that happens against Arizona, it's not going to be a close game. I think Arizona needs to possess the ball. Their offense needs to be really efficient on third downs. And they're going to need to score. They're not going to shut down this Washington State offense the way that Cal did. I just don't see that happening, especially without Jace Whitaker. You know, you need all hands on deck in the secondary. You know, when healthy, he's probably their best cornerback. You know, so now you're looking at, you know, Christian Young and Azeezy Hearn and Mackenzie Barnes and Troy Young, all these young guys who, you know, they're just not on, they don't have the experience. Sorry.
Young guys.
They don't have the experience level. Scotty Young Jr., we don't know if he's going to be healthy after he got banged up. Another young guy. So I'll say something along the lines of Washington State 34, Arizona 31.
Oh, I got 38-20 Washington State. I think that it's a game that is largely academic because I think Utah's going to win that game at Colorado earlier in the day. This gives Washington State, I think, an edge, even more of an edge than they have. If Arizona were to go to Washington State and win up there in the cold, you know, in the dark late at night, then that to me shows that this Arizona team is legit and for real, mm-hmm. regardless of what happens everywhere else in the conference.
But if they lost by 3 points, you wouldn't feel the same way?
Got to win the game. I'm saying 38-20 Washington State.
I mean, they're 10-point underdogs, and you laid out earlier all the factors that are working against them. If it right. comes down to a last-second field goal, you wouldn't be kind of impressed with that performance?
Well, I would be impressed, but I don't know if that would. I think if Arizona pulls off that upset, you sit there and you go, well, then they'll be favored against ASU.
Mm.
And to me, there's just so many hurdles they have to clear almost before kickoff.
Yeah.
And I think Utah wins that game, which means I think Arizona lacks a little bit of that extra spark late. And Washington State, maybe it's close midway through the third quarter. Washington State gets a couple of scores at the end, 38-20. And that sets up an Apple Cup that is a totally different story, because I actually kind of like Washington's chances in the Apple Cup.
Where's the Apple Cup at, by the way?
It's in Pullman.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. You like Washington's chances?
Washington's chances.
And then.
I know. Man. Interesting.
I got to be different, though.
Okay.
You guys both picked Washington State, and I feel like we can't all pick Washington State. As much as I really think Washington State will win this game, obviously because of Gardner Minshew and Mike Leach, the Pirate of Palouse and his insane offense, I'll be different. I will say Arizona 38, Washington State 35.
Ooh.
And mark it down. If Gary Brightwell does not play this week, we're going to see a Nathan Tilford touchdown.
Ooh.
That's my bold prediction. And Michael Levis is shaking his head.
Justin's super specific predictions always crack me up. They never come true, but they're fun at the time. So
he'll hit the upright, it'll bank in, and they'll win by one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have the Bears kicker hitting the upright four times last week?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't have that? Okay.
No. It's great.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. It's available and it's free on the App Store and Google Play.
And don't forget, next week we do our the week of home games. We do live podcast at Frog and Firkin. Thanksgiving week means that we're going to do things a slightly bit differently. It's going to be Wednesday at noon at Frog and Firkin. Come on by. Maybe we'll have a pie or something waiting for you. I don't know. Michael and Justin and I will be talking ASU, U of A, maybe a little Thanksgiving talk. It'll be great.
Oh, man. Thanksgiving power rankings?
Oh, start the list now.
All right, yeah. Let's do it.
best holiday of the year.
It is. And you know why? There's no, like, religious obligation. There's nothing else you're supposed to do on Thanksgiving outside of hang out with the ones you love, eat, and watch football.
Sounds good to me.
I'm in.
I'm down. That'll do it for this podcast. Thanks for listening.